Birds, people, and the dogs that bring them together. This is Lucky episode number 13. My name is Bill, and you're tied to the Woe Post. I'd like to say we've been getting after the training over the last week, but I've been a little bit distracted with this thing called turkey hunting. You know, last week I mentioned that my son would be hunting turkeys for his first time on the youth opener, and he harvested the perfect, I don't know, Big Jake, Small Tom, somewhere in the middle, but it was the perfect first turkey. And they made him work for it, too. And we had scouted that field together. We saw where the birds were coming out and how they were feeding across the field. We thought we had a pretty good setup. On the morning of the youth opener, we went out, set up right where we wanted to be. Those birds came out right where we thought they should. And they started feeding away from us, and we watched them just get smaller and smaller as they got further and further away down the field. My son was pretty disappointed, but we just waited for the birds to get out of sight, and I said, all right, we're going to make a move. So we moved further down, tried to intercept the birds. They came back out into the field and started feeding away from us again, and I was a little bit worried that he was going to be pretty let down. I would have been probably if I was an 11-year-old. Just as we were starting to get really concerned about it, the shadows receded and our decoys ended up in the sun. And that was all we needed to see. A big Tom and four smaller Toms or big Jakes came running over. I told my son Connor, go ahead and take the safety off. And that big Tom came right up to the decoys, and I said, all right, go ahead and shoot that bird, buddy. And Connor didn't do much. And I said, hey, buddy, go ahead and shoot that bird. Connor, shoot the bird right below the head. Connor, you got to do it. And the big Tom turned and ran away, probably heard me talking at that point. Then the four smaller turkeys came up to the decoys, and I said, all right, Connor, any one of those turkeys is a good bird. As soon as they spread out a little bit, go ahead and take one. And Connor kind of shifted back and forth behind the shotgun. The bird spread out. I said, all right, Connor, go ahead and pick one and take it. Connor, pick whichever one you want. Go ahead and take it. All right, buddy, we got to shoot one. Connor, pull the trigger. Connor, they're going to get away unless you shoot. And then boom. And Connor dropped the farthest left turkey right in his tracks. Of course, we immediately put the gun on safe, went running out there. The bird was dead right away. We got to get a good look at the bird. Connor was extremely excited. A little bit sad, a little bit nervous. And you know, that's exactly what I want out of my son as a hunter, is I want him to appreciate his harvest. I want him to take it seriously. And I want him to be a little bit nervous about pulling the trigger. I want him to know that he's trained and he's ready and he's skilled. And we practiced and we patterned his shotgun and he knew exactly where to aim and what to do. We did the flashcard style pictures on my phone, asking him, all right, do we shoot? Do we not shoot? Where do we shoot? And, you know, Connor was ready. He was, you know, he had passed hunter safety. He was ready to hunt turkeys, but he took it seriously. And that matters to me, and it's really important. And I know that he's going to continue to take this seriously as he matures as a hunter. Now, as for me, on the other hand, I am on the turkey struggle bus. This seems to happen to me pretty much every year. You know, last year I didn't get my turkey until I think the last day of the season, and I worked hard for that bird. This year I've had just the bad luck of having the birds feed away from me on this big field that I've got to hunt. I've gotten busted by two pretty big toms, or, you know, who knows? It could have been the same tom both times. I had another hunter walk up on the adjacent property you know, he didn't know I was there, and he didn't know that there was a Tom right at my 3 o'clock, about 20 yards away, getting ready to come right on front of me. He couldn't see me. He couldn't see the bird, but he did spook that Tom and made him run away. I'm giving these birds a break for a few days. I'm going to let the spot kind of cool off a little bit and see if I can get back out there and seal the deal before the season closes out. And if I don't, at least Connor got a bird for the family, I guess. You guys didn't come here to hear about turkeys. You came here to hear about birds and bird dogs. And I was going to tell you all about Superior Upland and the all-inclusive, fully guided, lodged meals, hunting on public and private land for grouse and woodcock in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I was going to tell you about Jake's new grouse camp, and I was going to get y'all excited for it, but unfortunately, he is fully booked for 2024. So if you want to get in on that, you're looking at booking for 2025. Now, Jake just came up with this idea, I don't know, a month or so ago, or at least he just told me a month or so ago, and he's already booked. So I'd say if you want to get in on some of Jake's hunts and some of the best grouse covers in the United States, I'd say book your hunting trip for 2025. You can find more information at www.superioruplandllc.com. This is the 8th episode in our series on the 32 Navda versatile breeds. And today we're talking about the Perdiguero de Burgos. I think you're only going to hear me try and say that one more time. Don't worry, I'm not going to get it right, so I'm just not going to mess it up anymore. The Burgos dogs, or Burgos pointers, or Spanish pointers, a lot easier to say it. They're a large pointer, and they're one of the oldest pointing dogs, at least that we know of. They've contributed to the development of other large pointing breeds. They've been in existence since the 1500s. They were originally used as a specialist on deer, but today they're mostly used on quail, partridge, and hare. They're a hunting dog of good size with a well-developed head, pendulous ears, a compact body, and solid legs. They have a short coat and they're square in proportion. They're calm and sedate, just like a lot of other big dogs. They're an excellent pointing dog, a great nose, versatile on fur and feather. They've got an excellent temperament and a noble, soft expression. According to the UKC, their coat should be dense, short, smooth, and evenly distributed over the body. They're colored white in liver, irregularly patched or roan, and often there's a distinct white patch on the forehead. Males will stand typically 24.5 to 26.5 inches, and females between 23 and 25 inches. And as you'll hear later on from our guest, Ted Ingram, these dogs get pretty big. He's talking about one that goes about 85 pounds. That's pretty big for a pointing dog. I won't delay this too much further. Let's just go to Ted and let him tell us all about the Burgos pointers. Hey, Ted, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be on your show. This is kind of exciting for us.
We were talking a little bit before this, and it is not easy to find a breeder or an authority on the Perdiguero de Burgos, which is the last time I'm going to say that, I think. So I think we agreed I can just call them the Burgos dogs or the Burgos pointers, right?
That's right. I've never found but one judge that could say Perdiguero de Burgos. Other would say, I can't roll my R's.
Was that one judge Spanish?
He was Portuguese.
Oh, there you go. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
My name is Ted Ingram. I'm the purveyor of Ohio Valley Burgos dogs, aka OVBD. I live in southeastern Ohio in the Athens area, and I love my dogs.
How long have you had dogs?
I've had dogs almost all my life, but never got into pointing dogs of any kind until just prior to having the Burgos. I had a litter of German Shorthair puppies and got on Facebook and saw Carlos Romo of California advertising a second litter of the Pettigettaro de Burgos. And I saw the mother and father and said, oh my God, I've got to have one of those.
So it was the looks of the dog that drove you to the interest?
It did. It was just so unique in its form. And it just made me excited to be part of the breeding or the ownership of these dogs.
Was it a desire to have a dog that not everybody else had, or was it really just the look of the dog?
Kind of both, because having a litter of short hair puppies, and I kind of crossed two lines of those. I bought what I thought was the very best pointer, and it turned out to be a field trial pointer, and realized, you know, I'm not a field trial person. I need a hunt trial dog. And so when I bred her, I through referral of the breeder that I got my dog, he said, we've had real good success with this crossing of field trial and hunt trial dogs, and it kind of slows them down a little, and I do mean a little. So,
had you been hunting birds for a while before that?
As youngsters, we hunted for grouse and turkey. We had quail on our farm, but we never used any dogs to do it. It was just all done by hand and walking and doing it. I didn't get into using bird dogs until I was living in San Diego, California. And I had I was working as an electrician, and the owner of the company had labs, and we would go out dove hunting in the Imperial Valley, and that kind of got me into wanting to have a bird dog. I've had Labradors, I've raised Chesapeakes, pound hounds from chocolate labs and black labs, you know, but I'd never owned a pointer until my hunting buddy had a pointer, and he said, you maybe you want to get one of these, and that's got me into the pointing breeds. So
quick, brief foray with the short hairs, and then on to the Burgos dogs.
Right into the Burgos dog, and I jumped in with my boots on, all the way up to my neck.
And when was this?
This was, say, Maxine was born, that'd be 90, or 2016, yeah.
Okay, so about 8 years.
Fairly recently, yeah.
Sure, yep.
But there were no dogs here to... Maxine came out of the second litter of American-born Burgos. So, I mean, that's just how new that the breed it was to America.
So tell me about that then, about the search for the right Burgos puppy for you.
I looked at his webpage when the pups were born. I saw the biggest, monstrous, most absolute huge pup in his litter. And I said, that's the one I want, you know, and that's the one I got. She's a 85 pound, probably closer to 90 now, you know, great with a head bigger than mine. So
that's a whole lot of point dog right there.
That's a whole lot of point dog.
So what's she like though out in the field though?
She is very tenacious in the field. She loves to hunt. Very obedient. She does. She knows her business. I made the mistake of saying one time that these dogs were natural pointers, and somebody said, "Oh, you know, no, you have to train them." It's like, well, I'm not this dog. I did. She's training me. I'm not training her. So,
I think if you have to train a dog to point, then it's not a pointing dog.
It's not a pointing dog, right?
Yeah. Call me crazy. But so it was probably a lab person that was telling you have to train him to point.
That's very possible.
I just lost all my lab listeners. Can you tell me a little bit about the history of the Burgos pointers?
In studying what I found at the Burgos Pointers, the first use of their name started in 1814 when the Germans discovered the group of dogs in the Pyrenees during the war. They were Haitians under an English admiral or an English officer, and they sent train loads of the Pedigero de Burgos back to Germany. And those were used to cross and create the Wuttenbers, which is a actual predecessor of the German short-haired pointers. And in America, like I said, they didn't come here until I think it was Carlos started in 2015, maybe with the first when he brought his first two over. They had made an appearance here in the early 2000s, but they only had the two pair, and the demand was, as we still see it, a little on the low side because people just don't know them. And that's kind of what got me into it, to wanting to breed the dogs and to really showcase the dog. I started taking Maxine to the dog shows, the UKC dog shows, and said, people have to see this breed. They actually have to see this breed to understand what this breed is about. And then I joined NAVDA and tested her in NAVDA. And luckily, I had the director or president of NAVDA was a family friend of my brother from when they were just out of high school. And he lived right close to me here, and he helped me work with her a little bit and get her ready for her natural ability test. And she only got a prize two at 10 months old due to her wanting to balk at the water. And I was going to advance her before, but she had had an injury to one of her rear pads just a week before the test, and I had to pull her out and couldn't complete her in time to advance that title, so.
Any prize on a 10-month-old dog is, I mean, that's a dog that's got a lot of potential.
Yes.
I mean, it's just a puppy. How do the Burgos dogs mature?
And in what way? I mean,
Okay, so my Munsters, for example, they're known to be very late maturing dogs. They're not
I
going to
was
come into their own.
shooting birds over her at 7 months old,
Okay.
and she was retrieving birds to hand. I have never trained a dog in my life. Even though I had all these other dogs, I had never trained a dog. I just took her to a preserve and I may put birds in front of her. And she just showed me all of her instincts, that were on key. And the only thing that the NAVDA president helped me with was narrowing down the things that to pass the test, to take her NAVDA test. So,
Sure.
now I've done that with one of my young pups, or one of my grandpups, I'll call it. I sold a male to a guy who had purchased a female from another breeder in Ohio here. They were both NAVDA registered dogs, pre-registered dogs that went to this guy, and he bred them, and he didn't to do the NAVDA registration. And this young couple purchased the dog, wanted to take their dog to test at NAVDA. And so I kind of the pitchfork out and said, hey, you need to get the paperwork done. And I called NAVDA, and they sent him all the DNA tests and everything ready to make a good recording of the litter that he had produced, so that the one dog could test NAVDA out of the 12 pups that were in the litter. So right now he is the top Pedigero de Burgos top scorer. He aced his test on his first try, so he did quite a good job. So
He's at the top of the totem pole right now.
I spent 2 weekends mentoring, or 2 days on weekends mentoring the owner, and with Maxine at hand to go through the portions of the test for him to to take home and work on. So and it seems to have worked out real good because he also used his training ability of taking his dog to a preserve and putting a lot of birds out in front of it. That dog has had over 200 birds in just his year and a half that he's been around.
Yeah, by way of the natural ability test, I think preserve birds or pen raised birds are really fine for getting a puppy ready for that test. And honestly, any for field work, any puppy, any well-bred puppy should be able to pass the field work portion of that test as long as you've done very, very basic obedience. I mean, if you've got a recall on the dog and the dog wants to cooperate and hunt with you, should find birds and point on its own, even if those are the first birds it's ever seen, theoretically anyway.
Right. And that's what I like. The Burgos is a very biddable dog. It wants to please its owner. It kind of resembles a lab in its personality because it wants to cling to you. It doesn't want to get too far ahead of you. It wants to keep eye contact with you wherever it's at so that it knows that you're close by. When it finds a bird, you're going to be close by. You know, they're a real good team worker, you know, especially for an older gentleman that can't get out and trot across the field to chase after his German short hair at the other end of the field, you know. So to me, it was an exciting dog to really enjoy because I can keep up with him, you know. So
sure. I bet that the bigger dogs are just fun to watch, whether they're quartering or they're targeting or whatever. I love, you know, we've got a couple Broncos in our Navda chapter and a couple Spinonis in our Navda chapter. And I really like watching those big dogs work, especially after my Munsterlander goes tearing around the field like a demon. And you have the bigger dog come right after that. And
there are less birds missed on the field by this breed. They are very methodical, searcher at a trot, and their noses are very good, so they stay away. Some of my pups that I've sold have gone into the grouse woods and have done phenomenal in the grouse woods because they don't get so far ahead of the hunter. And their paws are quite large. They call it a cat's paw, and they're not designed for fast running. They're designed for slow work and quiet work in their motion, so they don't jump birds too far ahead of them too often. So
I think there are two schools of thought for the grouse woods by way of size of the dog. You know, the English setter folks like their smaller dogs because they say they're cover dogs, they can get through the cover easier. I think the Gordon setter folks like their bigger dogs because they can push and plow through the cover easier. And I've heard both arguments now on this podcast, and I'm a smaller dog guy, but I love watching those big dogs work. What else is interesting about the temperament and strengths of the Burgos dogs?
They are generally a docile. They avoid confrontation. They love children. Children can pull. I've got neighbor kids that come down and have to handle my pups when they're young. And you can pull their tail, you can pull their ear, and they just look at you. It's like, why are you doing that to me? You know, it's like just absolute calm. Great family dogs. They get around with, you know, get along with all the other dogs. Unless the other dog starts pressuring them, you know, then they'll stand up for themselves. But for the most part, they would just avoid, you know, it's like look at you out the corner of their eye and say, okay, whatever, you know. Just a calm. I call them a very calm breed. They're known for that calmness. So,
what type of hunter or what type of hunting home should be looking for a Burgos Pointer?
I have sold them to all kinds of different hunting homes, but I've also sold them to non-hunting homes. I had one that he just wasn't going to. I mean, he had a great point that you couldn't get him off his point for nothing. But he wasn't pointing at the bird. He was pointing at the air, you know, totally opposite direction. It was where he had come at him from behind, and that's the direction he was pointing to the front, you know. So, and he was probably the largest dog I'd ever produced. I think he topped out at about 100 pounds. And he was like a big dumb jock, you know. So he was really suited to be a family dog, you know. And of course, they did call me right away and say, how do you get him off point? I said, well, you have to walk up, tap him on the head, and tell him, let it go, and direct him away from it, you know. But, I mean, he still wanted to point, but, you know, he was sight pointing at that point, you know. They've enjoyed him ever since. I mean, he's just, you know, a great family dog, But as far as I've sold them to old people, I've sold them to young people, and everybody is just enamored in their dog. I get nothing but good reports out of every pup that I've ever sold. I had one go to a little 14-year-old for a girl for her 14th year birthday, you know, and I actually talked to her last year and say, how's your, oh, he loves sleeping with me in the bed, you know, and he's just a great dog. But she, of course, she's not a hunter, you know. I sold a dog to an 80-year-old man that was on his fifth or sixth pointing dog, and every one of them were named the same name because he wouldn't buy one until the other one had passed, so they wouldn't have to remember what the name to call the dog. It was always Gesso, you know. So I don't think there's any place that these dogs couldn't live very comfortably. I only turned down one customer, and he wanted to put it in an apartment building on the third or fourth floor with no yard. And I just said, no, you're not doing that to my dogs, you know.
That's a lot to ask of a sporting dog.
Well, even though these are like, I mean, he was tossing between me and a Brocco Italiano. He wanted a couch potato, you know. But you don't, I'm sorry, you know, that's just not the life for the breed. And that's not where I want my breed going, is couch potatoes. I want the active people, even if they're out jogging every day, you know, or exercising every day, where they can get out, where the dog can get out and live its life as a pointing dog and look for, you know, hunt for different things, but being in control of the owner, because they want to be in sight of the owner, you know, when they're prowling about looking for birds or rabbits, or because these are also a true versatile dog. They're used for rabbit hunting, even though they don't bark after the bird or after the rabbit. You know, they're quite proficient in Spain as rabbit hunters. So
that's really where all of our pointing dogs came from, was actually from rabbit hunters. And, you know, researching for this series, what I learned was that, you know, the original pointing dogs were used to hunt rabbits. The pointing dog would go on point, and then they would send in hounds to really capture and kill the rabbit, and then the hunter would take them from the hounds. And then the advent of firearms for hunting changed that a little bit. And then the sport of hunting birds evolved out of that hunting for process.
The history I have of the pointing dog is that they were used to hold birds, and nets were cast over the dog and the bird at the same time.
Right. And I think that's a later evolution after hunting the yes. hares.
And they still practice the art of farrier or bird hunting. I'm sorry, not farrier. They use hawks in Spain to this day to hunt with the pettigero. There are several famous ones, you know, ones that have got really high scores in hunting. I've seen the birds take down a fox, and the Burgos goes and brings the fox back. There are still people that are still training their dogs, these dogs, to hunt in that form over in Europe. And I'd love to find somebody here to do the same thing and show that they know the difference of a prey bird versus a prey or a predator.
I know of a few, and I could actually put you in touch with them. We can talk after we're done recording here. There are several people that are doing that here in the States.
But not with the Burgos.
No, not with the Burgos. No, I think there are barely several Burgos dogs in the States. So, well, maybe you need to get them a Burgos pointer.
That's right. Yeah.
How many dogs do you have in your kennel now?
I currently have two males and two females. At my residence, I co-owned a dog out to Kansas City, Missouri. And we'll be looking for a breeding out there coming here in the next month or so. And when she comes in the season, we'll meet up and I'll be pushing my lines out there to the west a little bit and hope we can get this spread out a little more across the country.
When is that going to be, roughly?
It should be sometime in May. She should come in season in May. My current female is, I had her tied in the end of March, and I'm hoping she's carrying for me. It's only 3 weeks in, And I'm looking to have a litter here at the end of May. So right. I'll have one at the end of May and one at the end of July, probably, hopefully. So
you can ultrasound her pretty soon. I mean, pretty much right now, I think, right?
I don't know. I've never done that. Oh. I've never ultrasound at all.
Yeah, so, about 3 weeks.
I think about 3 weeks in.
Yep, is when you can ultrasound the dog, and if you find somebody that's good, they can get a pretty accurate count of the number of puppies that you can expect.
Yeah. I know I witnessed 5 ties so in a 4-day period. So I'm thumbs up that I've got something happening here.
That should be plenty, I think.
I don't like stressing dogs with a lot of veterinary visits, you know, sure. when they're in this condition. So,
besides that one litter, what else do you have planned for the year?
I have my young male that I imported from Spain a year ago summer. I'm looking to take him to NAVDA and test him for his UT. My original female, I've had her spayed, and moving on to the next generation. My young female right now is hopefully pregnant, so I won't be doing any testing with her until after all of that. And then we'll be looking at the UT test for her too.
Oh, excellent. So, excellent. And then hunting plans for the fall?
I've got to register for a chukar challenge, and that's what I like to do with the breed, because that is their native hunting bird is chukar and woodcock. In Spain, that's what they naturally hunt for. They don't do any water, so it was kind of interesting that they're interested in watching these dogs perform in the water. I have a lake on my property, and I get woodies in on it, so I'll be looking forward to knocking some woodies down off my lake and having my Burgos go out and retrieve them for me. So
I'm sure the dogs are going to love that, and I'm sure you're going to love eating them.
No, I do too. The birds, not the dogs.
Yeah, I hope it's just the birds. You've only had the 4 Burgos, right?
I currently only have the 4 Burgos, yes. Yep. I have my original pair. My first female I purchased in California. My first male I brought in, Maxine, was almost 3 years old when I brought him in for breeding from Spain as a 5-year-old. That had 3 prize once in Spanish field trials, in Burgos field trials. He was an accomplished male, but wasn't chosen for their breeding program in Spain. So I was able to acquire him for America's breeding program to help correct some of the health issues that we found with the early Burgos brought in to America. So.
What were some of those health issues, if you don't mind my asking?
It kind of has to go back to Spain, that there's two different groups of breeding in Spain. One group likes a heavy, nostalgic dog with real slack lower eyelids that did not meet the standards, but they're the only ones that show. They don't have a lot of endurance in the field because they're overweight or shorter legged and stockier, but the eyes are the issue with a cherry eye development because they have lack of retention of that third eyelid. The breeders in America, Maxine was one of those that I had to repair one eye after I purchased her, and it was cost me more than buying her from California and shipping her here to get the one eye repair. So I endeavored to look to see how this could be remedied. So I bought my male from a group that had bred that out of the dogs years ago by very selective breeding there. The UCEPB has a very strict breeding protocol out of the membership. They only breed 5 males to 10 females, and the dogs have to prize in the field, be morphologically correct, have very tight lower eyelids. That doesn't have to be all the way tight, but they as the standard is as close to the orb as possible. And they've remedied the situation of the cherry eye. And in talking with the president of that organization, he agreed with my idea of crossing these two lines back and trying to reduce that. The other breeders were having both males and females develop her cherry eye, hence Maxine having a cherry eye. And I reduced it at 50 to 60% of the litter. In my first breeding, I reduced it down to 30% and only in the males of the breed of my lines. Hence, I've purchased another male from that very same group to take to one of my tightest eyed females, or to the tightest eyed female that I've bred. And now I'm going to be taking it on to the next step and see if I can reduce that down to 10% or 0% of cherry eye coming out of my litters. But other than that, we don't see any other health problems. People ask me, have you hip tested them? Have you done this? Have you done that? Only the one group, show group in Europe or in Spain has shown only a 4% hip dysplasia problem, which means almost nil. So the other group has had none. And so why test for something that's until you start seeing problems, you know? And that's kind of the way the other breeders here in America have all felt about it, is, you know, why look for problems? You know, I do DNA test my dogs, and as each progression of generation I'm testing, Embark Vets has enlarged their database in a whole of all the combined breeds, and the amount of clearances my dogs are getting keeps going up and up and up and up and up. So PRA, there is a gene related to dysplasias, and they're free and clear of those. You know, it's just, you know, all kinds of different things. Well, maybe this is what happens when you take a base unit and test it for stuff that has been crossed, a dog that has been crossed and crossed and crossed with different breeds, you know, or to create different breeds. And there's where the problems ensue, you know, with the DNA testing or DNA issues. So
interesting. So Embark has the genetic marker for hip dysplasia in your breed?
No, they have there's a gene that it's a dysplasia gene. It doesn't say whether it's hip dysplasia or, you know, but it's a dysplasia gene. So I don't know how to describe it, but there's other skeletal things that they, you know, that they're free of. So it's like, you know, yeah, could you say that is a gene associated with dysplasia? Well, it depends on which dysplasia you're talking about, I guess. I don't know.
I understand. I misunderstood you. And I know that, so our breeder network uses Embark as well. And I know that we don't have the genetic marker for hip dysplasia identified, at least within our breed. We still do x-rays. X-rays don't really tell you anything other than the physiology of the specific dog that you're looking at. Just because that dog has bad hips doesn't mean that it's a genetic problem. It could have been a physiological problem. It could have been an injury as a puppy. Who knows, right?
I had that with my Chesapeakes when I was going to breed a second generation of Chesapeakes, and the female that I picked had things like, she had no dew claws, you know, no front or rear dew claws when she was born. No dew claws. And, oh, the other ones all had multiple dew claws. Don't know why, but they did. And I was going to use her for breeding, and I had the x-rays done for OFA. And the vet said she had a degenerative joint in one elbow. And I said, well, she jumped off the top of her dog box and injured herself, you know. And now I can't breed, because nobody wants to breed to a dog that has, you know, a degenerative disease of the elbow.
Right, has bad elbows, yeah.
So,
you know, I think we're getting better at it, and we need to continue to genetically test our dogs. I'm really excited that you use Embark. That's what our breeder network uses. I think Embark does more testing for more issues than anybody else is doing right now, at least the new Embark, the new systems that they have, and they offer more to breeders.
And also I watch the coefficiency of my line, of what I'm breeding.
Exactly.
Maxine was a 17 or a 27 Herschel, Iowa is a 27, which is pretty inbred, you know.
It's a little high.
That,
That's
it's a little.
pretty narrow line breeding right there.
Yeah. Where my first male Zeus came in at I think 18. The results that I've had are 17 and 14 out of the pups that I've tested in two litters. So I've had markers at 14 in both litters. So I'm excited to see what happens when I enter this other young male and see how things change in the next generation, in the next litter. So
are you using the pair predictor?
Because the breed has so little breeding pairs used by Embark that they aren't giving me any pairing information. So they're saying, well, we just don't know enough about this breed yet. It was kind of interesting when we first, there were several of us that did their DNA testing. And some of them come back as not pure Burgos. They come back as mixed with other things. I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is the first Burgos you've ever seen. You have to understand that it's not the German short hair in the Burgos. It's the Burgos in the German short hair.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. You know, this is a parent gene. You know, this is, yeah, those other dogs have this gene in them because this is the breed that created those dogs. You know, so. And we haven't had any problems since where they're starting to recognize that what dogs are, you know, and they're sending me reports of 100% Burgos. So
I think with Embark, if you have genetic results on the proposed sire and the dam, Embark has both of those tests, and you email them and you ask them for the predictions, they can give you the coefficient of inbreeding and all the other stuff that you would normally be able to do use on the tool yourself. You have to ask them, and they'll run it separately. But if you have a breeder's account, they'll do that for you.
I have a breeder's account, yeah, when I looked to see what the result was going to be out of this breeding that I've got, they said that we don't have enough data yet to give you a definitive answer. You know, because.
Gotcha.
We don't know enough about this breed yet to know how things are going to change.
Right.
So.
Right.
But my hopes is bringing these tie-dye dogs into the American lines is only going to help. There is one other breeder in America that has both dogs, male and female, from that hunting group. But they're young male. They just brought in. At 4 months old, probably maybe 6 months ago. So it's going to be a little while before they actually breed to their 3-year-old female. So
yeah, he's still a baby.
Yeah, he's still a baby. Yeah. And if they tried to make an attempt this, you know, at this point, it's probably not going to take. He'll have a lot of fun, but it won't take, you know.
Right. So. Besides being one of just a few Burgos dog breeders in the country, what makes you different?
I guess I started with my enthusiasm with the breed, and like I said, I showed the dog, trying to show the dog. I'm trying to introduce people to the dog. I take her to different events, you know, just so people can see the breed. And then with the correction, learning about the different groups in Spain and what they stand for, and. The group that I got my males from are all about the hunt of the dog. They don't, you know, they want the dog has to be judged correct as far as morphology goes, but their key is to produce the best, longest enduring hunting dogs out there that, you know, and that's the kind of the way I want to see my lines go. So it's nice that this other couple has brought in, you know, they got a female and then now a male. You know, and so we'll be kind of, I'm still using a crossbreeding of the two jet lines, and they're going with a straight line, you know, from that group. So it's going to be interesting to see which one of us prevails. You know, so.
Well, hopefully you guys can cooperate and produce a healthy, genetically sound, solid pointing dog.
Yeah. Well, and another thing is NAVDA. A lot of, there's a lack of enthusiasm, except for this young male that I helped mentor, of people actually going forward with their NAVDA registrations and actually testing their dogs, you know. And I'm trying to push that because I'd like to see that Breeders' Award one day, you know, four of my pups actually testing, you know, and getting that NA score, you know, on an early run, you know, like my original did at 10 months old, you know. So
it's nice to see if we're doing the right thing. And a hunt test is a pretty good metric of that, I think.
Yeah. The other owners that, like I said, I've got quite a few owners that are hunting their dogs and are very happy with the hunt of their dogs. But they, you know, they're just not, you're not seeing them. I belong to a pointing breeds club, and we're going to be doing hunt trials with our dogs to try to get more people to see them in the walking hunt trials. Garrett Kite and his wife, with Cletus, AKA Kite's good old boy, is a phenomenal dog. I was so excited to be able to work with him because he is just everything you'd want in a Burgos, except for we went to a checker challenge and I beat him by 10 seconds with my young male. So
you had youth on your side.
Yeah, well, they're both the same age.
There you go.
Yeah, so there's like 2 months difference in their age, and young BT, he showed his stuff in a 7-minute run on a checker challenge. Had they counted not using 2-3 of the shells that I was permitted to use, that I'd have got credit for those, and it made it a 4-minute run. So I beat Garrett and his dog by 13 seconds. So
we'll have to make sure he listens to this podcast. Ted, I really appreciate you being on this show. Why don't you go ahead and wrap it up for me?
I really would like to see this dog make it in America. I think it's a great hunter for all types of hunting, waterfowl. They have big wide paws, you know, that are webbed. They swim really good. Unfortunately, Spain doesn't allow waterfowl hunting. So in America, they should be taken off in that realm, as well as in the grouse fields and the prairie fields. And their demeanor is wonderful around people and children. They greet everybody with love. And I just think that America would really enjoy these relaxed hunters out of the field and monsters when they get into the field that just have to find birds. So
I think you're right. I think a lot of people always ask, you know, what's your dog's off button like? And it sounds like they're looking for one of your dogs.
These have a very, very good on-off switch. Now, they can be couch potatoes 1 minute and staring at birds the next, you know, and ready to rock and roll. So
Ted, how can people get a hold of you if they want to contact you to learn more about the Burgos Pointers?
I have quite a bit of information on my breed and my pedigrees on Facebook and Ohio Valley Burgos Dogs. That's the only thing I have currently. I do have an email address of ted@ohiovalley-burgosdogs.com for personal information, but I do messaging on the Facebook page as well, because it's a bit almost like a business account, so I'm allowed to talk about selling dogs on Facebook for some reason. So my phone numbers and address and everything is on that Facebook page, so they can readily find me and view what the owners of my different dogs, my pups that I've sold, what they've done with them. I try to post annual birthday pictures of each of the pups from my generations, you know, or get some kind of feedback from the owners, you know, how's your dog doing this year? You know, how's your doing? You know, what's your dog doing? You know, and I've always getting good responses that all my customers are happy customers. So
providing hunters with the best bird dogs that we can give them, I think is the best we can do, right?
That's right.
Ted, thanks so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you for your asking me to do this.
I hope you enjoyed episode number 13 of the WoPost podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast, like or follow on social media at the WoPost. Share it with all of your friends. Leave a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice, or become a patron at patreon.com/thewopost. As always, you can contact me at my website, www.thewopost.com, by email, bill@thewopost.com, or through Facebook or Instagram. Stay steady, and God bless.